I don't know how many of you follow American politics, but most of us will be aware that things are already heating up in the United States regarding the next election. People are beginning to dig and see if they can find anything that they can cast up regarding their opponent, and that's even the ones in their own party. And then they have the different parties as well, and things are heating up, and people are going to great lengths and to unbelievable expense in order that they might have the opportunity to have the office of probably what is the most powerful person, human person, mere human on earth, that is the President of the United States. Calvin Coolidge was the 30th President of the United States. He was well liked by people, and he shocked the nation when he said in, I think it was 1928, as they began to get ready, just as they are now in the United States for another election, when he said to them, "I do not choose to run. I do not choose to run." And obviously there was a great deal of interest in this statement. He was besieged by reporters wanting details, and he was very honest with them, and he was a man who sometimes was humorous, but also very serious, as he had to be as a president. But he told them that he wanted a private life back again, and he didn't want to do the office of president anymore. And people were astounded, because others were tripping over themselves to have the opportunity to maybe get elected as president. He was turning his back upon it all, but there was one journalist, and he kept pressing him and saying to Mr. Coolidge, he said, "Exactly why, but why don't you wish to be president for another term?" And the president said to him, he says, "Sure, there's no chance for advancement. There's no chance for advancement. I'm more or less, I can't get any further than I am now." Now, he allegedly did say that with a degree of humor, just to get the reporter probably to be quiet. But it does hint at the limit that often comes. The limit that often comes with the pursuit of what the world pursues. Enthusiasm, even great anticipation that is associated with some goal or another, very often leaves us feeling that I can't get any further. There's no hope of advancement here. He felt that he couldn't go any further. And folks, I want to say to all of us today that it is quite the contrary for Christians. Some Christians progress quickly when they are saved. I had my ups and downs, and there's plenty of struggles, as I shared with the young people today in the Bible class. Being saved as a young man, I had plenty of difficulties. I was honest with them. I said many of them came from Christians. Should have been encouraging us to go the right way, not to try to walk with one foot in the world the best we could. But anyway, that is another story. As far as progressing is concerned, this is something what the apostle draws to the attention of the church at Philippi in the three verses that we've looked at this morning. He wanted them to not get to that point where they think, well, there's no further advancing for us. Reminds me of a man that I spoke to one time, a Christian man. I only met him the once. And it was coming near Christmas time, and he said, "The important thing for us, for me and you, is not to be saved, satisfied, and stuck." Saved, satisfied, and stuck. And Christian, there is no reason for us to be stuck, because we can grow, and we can go on, and we can advance with the Lord. And I want to look with this, with you this morning. This advancing or going forward, and it is something which I think is again relevant as we come towards the end of another year. And many are reflecting on how it was with them in the children's meetings, in the Sunday school, the Bible class, and of course we'd be reflecting upon it ourselves, and we are very thankful to the Lord. But we must look at our own hearts and say to our own hearts, am I still determined to advance, to go on with the Lord? And I'm sure you are seeking to do the best that you can. So we're looking briefly this morning at four keys to advancing. Four keys to advancing. I want to say here that the apostle chose his words very carefully when he was writing to the church at Philippi. And first of all here that he had a desire to know more of Christ. I think he said words that would really have taken their attention there whenever we read in verse 10, where the apostle says, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. He'd been 25 years on the Christian pathway now. And he felt that he really needed to know more of Christ. And the fellowship of his sufferings been made conformable unto his death. Yes, he was in many ways a giant as far as a missionary was concerned. And a preacher. And he was fearless. And he was reliable. And he was a very prayerful man. His zeal was contagious. You can see that in all of his writings without fail, the zeal that he had for the Lord. But folks, he hadn't arrived. He didn't sit back and think, I've arrived now. Because if you look at verse 12 there, he says, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect. But he says here that he follows after. He follows after. You see where he uses the word apprehend there in that verse 12. That I may apprehend that for which I am apprehended of Christ Jesus. Well, the word apprehend, it means to lay hold of something and not let it go, or to grasp something in a way that you're not going to let it go. And that's the way Christ had laid hold of him. And when Christ laid hold of him, or when he lays hold of you or I, he doesn't let us go, but he holds on to us. And as he holds on to us, there's a chance for us to become more and more like him. You see something here in the apostle's statement, something which he brings to our attention quite often, that he felt that he needed to know more about Christ. He recognized that he'd come a long way, but yes, he felt that he needed to know more of him. I'm going to just turn to a passage that I looked at with you fairly briefly recently, but there's another verse there. It is Romans chapter 7. It is about the law of sin and the apostle being extremely honest about his own struggles. And he was not apologizing for them and saying, well, poor me. Feel sorry for me, would you? He wasn't saying any of that. But he was pointing out his failures and how he wanted to be better for the Lord. If you look there in verse 23 of Romans 7. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing in me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. You see, there is a propensity within man's heart which comes into conflict with his holy desires, with his desires to grow more like Christ, his desires to reflect the love of Christ. And there is that in the mind of man that comes into conflict with that. That's what this passage is about. And you and I know about that. And maybe you've experienced it a lot during 2023. And you will see here, he goes on to say, O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? Some commentators believe that when a man was deemed a criminal, that as punishment, and it was barbaric, they actually tied a corpse to him and made him walk about with that corpse tied to him. And that was something that he was referencing here. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body, this body of death? But whether that is actually the case or not, and I've no reason to doubt it actually, He was referring to his flesh and to the struggles that he had. And again, over in Galatians in chapter 5 and verse 17, it says, "For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary one to the other." It means they're opposing one another. So that really settles the matter as far as living for the Lord or living for the world is concerned. Yes, there are struggles there, but you cannot be in unity and in harmony with something which is opposed to you. The word contrary here means to be fiercely facing each other. And that is what was happening with him. These are the contrary one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would. When did you ever think of that? You ever find yourself there? You wanted to do something for the Lord, and you just struggled. And the flesh opposed you, and you just felt it so difficult to do what you wanted to do for the Lord. And as a person, and this is a fact, as a person grows closer to the Lord, they become more conscious of their own failure and their own frailty and their own vulnerability. And so often when that is the case, we can look ahead and think, well, it actually looks a bit like a cul-de-sac. Sometimes Paul was in that position. Look again at Romans chapter 7 in your own time. And I wonder, is there any of us who could have slipped into the trap of feeling, I will just continue as I am. I know I'm saved, but I never seem to get much beyond there. And we've allowed ourselves, in a sense, to become stuck. It can happen very easily. Well, over there in Revelation chapter 3, again, we've looked at these churches before with you, some of them. We mentioned this one this morning. It is Laodicea, the church of Laodicea. And they were lukewarm. I'm reading from verse 15. "I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot." What that really means is, I would that you would recognize your need. "So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth." I think we mentioned the metaphorical language here some time ago, a few weeks ago, where the water coming, some of it was hot and the other was cold, and by the time coming from another area, and by the time they got to Laodicea, they were both lukewarm, but one of them had a propensity to make people sick. And when the Lord used those words to spew the out of my mouth, they would know exactly what he was talking about here. And then it says, "Because thou sayest, I am rich and am increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and blind and poor and naked." Folks, do you see when a Christian man or woman or a church gets the point where they say, "I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing," and you tie that in with the rest of the situation here at Laodicea, they're stuck. They're stuck, and there's no desire to know more of Christ. In fact, that is very clearly brought out in verse 20, where the words are, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him, and he with me." I'm not sure how many times I've looked at that. I've preached it in a gospel message, but I was just thinking this past week where it says, "If any man hear my voice and open the door," you and I have to do it. You and I have to get back into fellowship with him, or to seek to desire more of him. And there's nothing better, folks, that you and I can do as we soon approach another year than to desire to know Christ more, to desire to know more of him, and to make sure in our own discipline of our lives that we're in a position to grow closer to him. Isn't that what the apostle said here when he talked about apprehension and apprehended and laid hold upon? Christ had laid hold upon him, and he wanted to lay hold upon more and more of Christ and to know more of him. So one of the keys to advancing is, we love to have visitors in, and thank you for coming if you're a visitor. As I said last Sunday night, we had a really good turnout, and we're looking forward to tonight, of course, and We think of the choral service, there'll be some visitors in maybe as well, and all of that. But that's not really, that doesn't advance you and I as individuals. It encourages us. But we want to advance. We need to know more of him, as the Apostle Paul did when he said here, "But I follow after." But I want you to notice not just the desire to know more of Christ. Another key here was dealing with distractions. You see what he says in verse 13. "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do." Well, you will see there that "this" and "I do" are in italics. And that means they were not in the original manuscript. They're put in there to give the understanding. That's why they're in italics. But one thing, forgetting those things which are behind. Just as in our day, in Paul's day, there were many, many things to distract them. And folks, whenever we become distracted, there's every chance then that we can lose out. Can lose out, but Paul had it down to one thing. He said, "This is what I'm going to do. One thing I do." And he was focused on his relationship and his walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. We could talk for a long time this morning about the problems that he encountered there. Some of the problems he encountered. There was the problems of wickedness all around him. Hostile environment. Surprise. Sinfulness. Things that would have him take a step back and think, "Is this really how the people live? How they're doing?" In many ways, it was like a lot of the world today. And when you look around you and you see all of these things, it's so important for us that in the midst of that, that we're able to look to him and we're able to deal with distractions. You see, we can do either one of two things with distractions. We can either reject them, or we can embrace them. Please don't embrace them, because that is what we could do. We could embrace them. When Paul was writing to the church at Corinth, he was writing to them to encourage them in the second epistle to continue to walk with the Lord, and he outlines briefly some of the problems he had in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8. "For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble, which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure." The word "pressed" there, it is a word that carries the meaning of to be pressed down, to press something down so much that it can't move. You ever feel like that, Christian? Pressed down by something in the world around you, you can't move. You can't move for the Lord. Pressed out of measure. Above strength. The thought there is of extreme frailty. I'm sure we've all felt like that as well. And then he goes on to say that we despaired even of life. Please don't get to that point. If you do, talk to me. Talk to anyone. The Lord is always there for you. But it shows you here is a man, and he was right down there. As far as the distractions as far around him were concerned, there were mostly wickedness. It's not as bad perhaps in Northern Ireland, but they're there nonetheless. And at every turn, you're going to see sin advertised. Maybe you'll have invitations to be involved as well. That brings me to another thought here regarding dealing with distractions. Not just the wickedness that there is around, and there is the chance of being well led. Remember when Paul was writing to Galatians, I'm not going to turn to it because I've looked at it before with you. Galatians 5, verse 7, he said, "You did run well. Who did hinder you?" Who did hinder you? And we said that the word "hinder" there, it means for the pathway to be disturbed in front of you. You know how it is, you're going along a road and then there's a big giant pothole. Or for these days there's floods and you just can't get through. You can still get to where you want to go to, but you have to go another way. You have to go another way. And I remember when we were coming probably going to the boat. We always come down into, we skirted round York and then up to Stranraer. It was a long enough drive. I think it was 267 miles or something like that. But anyway, this one year we were heading home, and there's a place called Stamford Bridge. Now, not the one associated with the football team, but this is a Stamford Bridge. If you've heard of the Battle of Stamford Bridge, outside York a few miles, and it's just a small village or town, really. There's a bridge there, but the whole thing was flooded. And we got there, and there's floods everywhere. You just see cars sitting, you just see about that much of the roof of the car, and the car park was always left. And we had to go a different way. And I can remember on that occasion, the other pathway, there was another pathway, but the other pathway, it was rougher. And it took a lot more time. In other words, it was rougher, and it was time-wasting. And folks, when the pathway ahead for the Christians at Galatia were broken up, Paul says, who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? You're not walking, following the word anymore. What happened? He's saying here, he's saying to them, you're not on the path, you're still Christians, you're on the pathway. One day you will be in heaven, but the road you're on now will bring us problems, because it will be rough, because you're off God's pathway. When I say rough, I mean it will be affecting you in a way that would not have affected you if you were walking with the Lord. The pathway can be rough, but think of time wasting. Think of how much time is wasted. The greatest shortage in the world is time. God's given to us an opportunity, a window of opportunity called life, to live for him. And Paul here, as I said, was reflecting upon 25 years of walking with the Lord. And he said, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. Need to deal with the destructions or the distractions, whether it's the wickedness around us or some perhaps pleasant voice that calls us to follow after it. Most likely something that is sensual or something that appeals to the flesh. If you look carefully there in Galatians chapter 5, I've just quoted it to you, part of it, you'll see that it says there, of course there has been carelessness now, and they have been hindered, that's right. And he asked the question about a person in verse 10, he that troubleth you shall bear his judgment. It seems that it was down to one person. Sometimes it is. And then in verse 13 it says, for brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. What is liberty? Liberty is freedom to do the right thing. Freedom to do that which is right. And that is what the apostle here was encouraging these believers at Galatia to do. Before I just move on, I just want to say that dealing with distractions was something that he did. He said, this one thing I do. This one thing I do. So there was his desire to know more of Christ. There was his dealing with the distractions. But there was the direction here. If you look at the beginning of I'll read all of verse 13. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. His direction now, well, or his, you could say his dependence, because he's now looking to Christ as he looks to the past and says, well, Paul dare hardly think about his own past. It was so bad. And whether this is a reference to his past suffering as a Christian, or if there is included in that his past life as a terrorist, he looks at it all now as under the blood of Christ. And he says, forgetting, it means to put out of the way. The word forget doesn't mean to a failure to remember, because he was very intellectual. He wouldn't have forgotten in an intellectual way. But it means not to be controlled by. Not good. Not to be controlled by the past. So whether it was his own terrible life before he was converted to Christ, or his own considerable struggles because of the wickedness of men, whatever it was, he wasn't going to be controlled by it. He wasn't going to be controlled by it, because his dependence was on the Lord to give him direction, the one who had saved him. And I think that I've said enough about that, that this was something that could prevent him advancing, sitting, dwelling on his past failure, or sitting, focusing on the dangers that he'd faced, or the struggles that he had. He wanted to move on now. He was reaching forth. He was moving on. He talks there in verse 12 about following after. In verse 13, reaching forth unto those things which are before. There's dangers as we try to do that. One is living on yesterday's efforts, thinking, oh, I did well last year, or did well last week. But we require a fresh, up-to-date blessing. There's one of the ladies, and she's here this morning, probably didn't remember, but some time ago in the prayer meeting, or one of them, she prayed, Lord, that the young people would have a daily up-to-date walk with the Lord. I've thought about that, not every day, but certainly every week since. I've thought about it very often, an up-to-date experience with the Lord and a fresh, up-to-date walk with him. Yesterday's efforts were good, and the Lord knows, but we need help to make more efforts. And we can't live in yesterday's efforts, but equally, living out yesterday's failures, being filled with pessimism, filled with despair and thinking, well, you know, I didn't do so well, other people. That kind of a pessimistic outlook can have us, it can actually have a lead to a cycle of despair where we don't want to do anything. And we're not really interested in what the Lord has for us to do. I haven't time this morning now, it has run off on me. But if you look in Numbers chapter 6 and verse 8, you will see something there of the law of the Nazarite. Now you will know that the name Nazarite means separate or separation. And the Nazarite was one who was separated unto the Lord. And he had to have a spirit of consecration about him. And part of the law of the Nazarite was he had to be very careful how he looked. He wasn't allowed to shave his head. And what he ate, he wasn't allowed to eat anything that come from the vine, anything to do with that. And there, the whole passage is to do with appetite. What appeals to the eye, what appeals to the flesh, he had to be separate from those things. And folks, when they're bad, you and I need to be separate from them as well. I could go on and say a lot more about that, but I'm going to leave it there. The direction or that he chose, or the dependence that he had, if you want to look at it that way, that he, the one thing he does, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth to those things which are before. You and I hopefully learn from the past. You know what we need to do with it? All of us, me included, need to leave it there. If it's a good memory, let's remember it. If the Lord blessed us and we seen real answer to prayer, let's be thankful and be prompted to pray on. But if it didn't go well or we failed in some way, just leave it where it is. Leave it where it is and let's learn from that. I've one final thought here. It was his dedication. For in verse 14 here, he says, I press toward the mark. He's using again the language here of an athlete, and one, the thought is of straining every sinew and every muscle to be at your very best, which you have to be as you take an athlete today, let's say those who sprint, and they're like a finely tuned engine. A little head cold will throw them totally off. In your eyes and mine, it'll not, because it'll only add maybe half a second to their time, but that's them out of it. That's him out of it. They need to be at their very best in order to win. And the apostle here, the verb actually, it carries a meaning of working out, reaching forth or working out. And if you go to the gym, a lot of people go to the gym these days, you work out at the gym in order, well, that you can improve. You can improve your muscle memory and that kind of thing, and you can improve your general health. But when you go to the gym and you sit and talk to somebody you hadn't seen for a long time, while that may be nice, it'll not help you any. And folks, you and I need to reach forth. There has to be that reaching forth, that working out, as it were, or another way of describing, thoroughly develop. People go to the gym to develop arm muscles, leg muscles, to be toned. And that's what we do. That's what we want to do, what Paul wanted to do, to be walking with the Lord in such a way that he was at his best. That was dedication. That's the human side of it. See, the Lord can give us all the opportunities. And the open door there, as he did to the church at Laodicea. But the dedication, I must decide to press on. And the Apostle Paul said that he was pressing on toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. What an encouragement he was to the church of Philippi and to us. And as we come to the end of 23, let's think of these keys to advancement. Keys that the Apostle Paul gave to Philippi. And may the Lord help us all to advance, not in a selfish way or, oh, I want to be seen and wouldn't it be great if I was this. He wasn't interested in any of that, but advance in a godly way, in a way that will honor the Lord. I trust